Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John Ledyard from FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting, along with Trevor Sikkema of PewterReport.com, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Who we're going to talk about today, Trev? Because we are going back this week and doing second-year snapshots, looking at each in the second year, the year two,
did you just come up with that on the spot?
No, actually, I titled yesterday's pod second-year snapshots. Thanks for checking it out.
No, big fan of the pod, Trevor Sikkema.
Hard to find good work.
I literally just thought that you came up with that, and I was about to be really proud. No. But I guess you still came up with it, right?
I did, yeah. It was.
Or did you plagiarize it? Don't lie to me.
I didn't plagiarize it, although I would imagine that the phrase...
Don't lie to all these kids out here, okay?
Second year snapshot is not probably the most original. Well, I'm going to Google it right now, actually. Anyway, we're going through and we're looking at different teams' draft classes. We're going division by division and looking at their draft classes from a year ago. We thought it was too soon to redraft it, so we just decided we go through, we'd look at the classes, how did they fare in year one, and what the expectations are or should be for year two for a lot of these guys. So, Guess what? I just looked up second-year snapshots on Google, and two of the top three results were our podcast. So,
Look at that. You and are an innovator, my friend.
That's very true.
You are blazing new trails, new alliterations every day.
Yes. The top result, though, is some undergraduate degree application for a college, which I don't understand why it would
should
be called.
Should we
apply? Maybe. Or maybe we should sue
him. Or should we just go straight to suing him?
I think
for
straight
taking
to
the name.
Straight to suing them.
Okay.
If anybody's a lawyer out there, boost.
If anybody's a lawyer out there, tweet at us. Do we have a case? If the answer is no, don't give us your crappy opinion. If the answer is yes, all right, help us out. We'll all get rich.
Agreed. Okay, the Bucs draft from 2017. OJ Howard.
Oh, we're starting with the Bucs?
Yeah, we're starting with the Bucs.
Out of the gate?
You want to finish with the Bucs? I thought we'd go worst to best.
Wow. That's not true. That is not true.
The Bucs aren't going to finish fourth?
All right, hold on.
No, I mean, I think they're better than the Panthers, but Cam just gets it done, man. I have yet to see Jameis get it done.
Oh, I thought you were talking about draft classes.
Oh,
like
from 2017.
This year's draft classes.
Oh, no. I was talking about just how good the teams are.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm less offended. Less offended.
Still offended.
We can start with the Bucs. That's okay.
You loved the OJ Howard. You thought the fact that he fell was a miracle.
I did. I thought that OJ Howard was, in terms of like a football player, certainly like a top 10 dude. He's for a position that is definitely coming up, and we've seen this really catch fire throughout the league over the last couple of years, of being able to use tight ends as specialization players and really just mismatch nightmares. Especially when you have a player who has the frame, the size, the strength to play in line, to play on the line of scrimmage, almost as if, hey, this could be a running play. We're not sacrificing anything by having this guy in the game. And then all of a sudden, you know, you do a little play action, you boot this guy one way, whole rest of the play goes the other, and all of a sudden OJ Howard's wide open for an 80-yard touchdown. And that happened twice for the Bucs. That happened twice. They burned people like this. And that's exactly why they drafted him as high as they did, because they wanted to cover him that way. And people kind of looked at it like, oh, well, they already have Cam Brate. How could they possibly use two tight ends? Well, I guess this is how. Now, you can talk about value if you want, how replaceable he could be, how replaceable that number 19 pick would have been. But it would have been either – so I know that it would have been either him or Dalvin Cook. And Dalvin Cook just kind of didn't wow them, I guess, possibility-wise, like O.J. Howard did.
Cannot relate.
Or like a – I guess – do I say safe?
Yeah, that's fair. That part of it's fair.
So, like, I think that was more of the part is that they just really good dude, really hard worker. I mean, he's basically – you get this guy in the room and every coach would fall in love with him. So, it makes sense why they fell in love with him enough to take a tight end, knowing what his potential could be as a mismatch player on the offense. But, I mean, it's still in question. People are still – and I think they're always going to question picking a tight end, especially when you already had a good one in Cam Brate, whether that was worth number 19 overall. And honestly – if it all comes together and he's a piece of a championship team, sure, whatever. But if we're talking about the word snapshot, like in a snapshot, just this judgment, it's hard to think that picking a second tight end number 19 overall would have been worth it.
Right. And I think Howard is talented, but you've got to be one of the best tight ends in the league for a while to be worth a first-round pick. That's just the way it is.
Right.
Like
right.
Eric Ebron. You know, if they took him in the third round, I think everybody's okay with it. Like, the expectations are less. The fans don't hate him.
But
he has produced in some ways.
That's what you're 10. Seeing these teams reach for these players, these mismatch-type players.
Right. But Howard... You know? I wonder what Howard would grade out for me with my new numerical scale, because I thought his upside was through the roof, and the guy's so impressive when you talk to him. He has the right demeanor. He's smart. He's tough. And then you watch him on tape for Alabama, and I just thought, he doesn't know how to run any routes. You know, he ran the most basic stuff you could possibly imagine.
Sure.
90% of his production came in both the championship games on blown coverages. Nothing he did, except run in a straight line as fast as he could.
Right.
And he didn't even separate from coverage. He just, there was nobody, you know, and he got tons of credit for that game. And they said that those games boosted his stock. I don't know if I really buy that completely, because I don't think teams are stupid. They saw, wow, this is super easy. But in terms of talent, athleticism, size, everything that you want, blocking ability too, he was going to be able to contribute early on. I thought everything you kind of wanted was there. So I didn't expect him to go to a team that already had a good tight end.
I think he's absolutely a complete tight end. Now,
going to be. I think he has a potential to be, at least.
Sure. I mean the skill set. That's what I mean. He'll never be the receiver that Evan Engram is.
He had six touchdowns last year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's
a
big impact. That's really nice.
Yeah, and no, I mean, he was fine. OJ was totally fine. And I think he's going to continue to be. It's just always going to be like, hey, like I said, if it all comes together and they end up winning a championship and he's, a part of it, nobody's going to care. But if they don't, you're always going to look back and be like, why'd you pick a tight end two or a rotational or a certain situational, maybe a mismatched tight end at 19? You know, if you're picking this guy in the second round, it's a home run. But yeah, I mean, the rest of the draft, though, I think Jason Light, the 2016 draft with Vernon Hargraves and Roberto Aguayo was just bad.
Yeah,
it was really bad for Jason Light, the Bucks GM. But then this draft with OJ Howard, Justin Evans, who ended up being a really good starter for them late in the season, Chris Godwin, who is gonna be a stud. I mean, he already showed signs of it last year.
Didn't he have over 500 yards receiving last year, really quietly?
I think he did have 525, but then only that one touchdown on the very last pass of the season. So
still, yeah. Super exciting year for Evans, Howard, and Godwin, because and Beckwith too, because their first four picks, and Beckwith probably was on the field most consistently, those first four picks all flashed a ton. Like, if you were going to grade them after 1 year and you had to, and that's all you had to go off of, you would call them all hits probably.
Yeah,
and
you could argue about whether Howard
should be selected at 19, but, you know, these guys were all contributors, and like you said, Godwin wasn't even one of the top receivers going into the season. And he finished with 34 catches for 525 yards. And I'm sure the scoring numbers will come up with more usage. So, and Evans gets three picks. And I saw him get beat at times, but I saw him make plays on the ball. And, that's something at Texas A&M he didn't do enough of. So, I would be super excited about this draft class if you're the Bucs. They took guys that were pretty raw, to be honest, especially Howard and Evans. Beckwith coming off a major injury. You know, this was a risky draft in a lot of ways. And
it's panned out so far. You know, obviously you have to temper risks, to certain cases, but I like the idea of picking guys where you can see the talent and trusting the coaches that you've hired to get the most out of them. Because if you start, thinking in the back of your head, this guy's really talented, but I don't know if we have the coaching staff around him, then all of a sudden you're limiting yourself in the draft and you're already starting behind the eight ball with the draft. And that's, I don't think, ever where you want to be. So it goes into this whole, team franchise, even building kind of a philosophy where you've got to have it on every phase. You've got to be able to scout well, you've got to be able to pick the guys well, and then you've got to be able to coach them well. So I thought I thought the Bucks coaching staff did a really good job with the rookies last year.
Yeah, agreed. It was impressive start for Tampa. Huge year two coming up for those guys. If they can all continue to grow, they're really going to look back on that class fondly, I think.
Yep.
The Falcons, you know, they have been used to getting a lot out of the rookie classes, maybe not as rookies in every situation, but the year before this was Keanu Neal and Deion Jones with their first two picks. So
studs.
Obviously super happy with that. Yeah, Austin Hooper and Wes Schweitzer are both starters, Devondre Campbell. So they got five starters, or Schweitzer started, I guess, at some points last year. They got five starters out of their first five picks last year, or in 2016. So 2017, big expectations. Tack McKinley, six sacks. He really made an impact as the season went on. He showed those flashes and signs of being a future stud for this team. But that was sort of kind of
he's a starter, right?
Yes, he's a starter going into next year.
Started,
for sure.
He started at the end of the season, kind of, right?
Technical starts. I don't know if he
started. Mean just like good playing time.
Right,
but
good
you,
playing
you
time for sure.
There.
Yeah.
Who plays opposite him then? Oh, Vic Beasley, duh.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking Claiborne's not there anymore, so I'm like, wait, right. What?
Brooks
Reed. Mean that, like, Tack can start.
Brooks so. Reed's their number three, so it'll definitely be Tack this season starting. I think that Duke Riley has a huge season upcoming. He was the 75th overall pick. You know, I think when you look at this Falcons draft class, Tack McKinley went 26, Duke Riley went 75, Sean Harlow went 136. He's probably going to be a backup guard for this team this season. So the expectations really fell off, kind of, you know, being a late fourth round pick for Harlow, then DeMonte Casey, who was great on special teams as a rookie, and then Brian Hill, Eric Salbert, you know, all fifth rounders. I don't think there's huge expectations there for those guys to be contributors at all, or was there? I don't think there was that expectation when they were drafted. Really, if you were a Falcons fan, you were hoping Tack became a stud, an 8 to 10 sack guy at least every year, and fixed some of those pad level issues he had. And Duke Riley developed into another type of Deion Jones type of linebacker. And that didn't really happen. You know, Riley missed a ton of tackles.
What'd you think of Riley coming out?
I loved Riley coming out, but he did miss too many tackles.
So you had him over Beckwith, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like,
yeah, because so did I.
Honestly, Beckwith's college tape was totally unimpressive.
It wasn't good. People, Bucks fans still give me crap for that. When I'll come out and like I'll say something about a prospect, and like sometimes Bucks fans will be like, yeah, says the guy who didn't like Kendall Beckwith coming out last year. And I'm like, okay, listen. And like I did a whole Cover 3 column, which is the column that I write for PeterPort.com, after the draft. And I took when Kendall Beckwith got drafted, when they traded back up for him, I was kind of like skeptical on the live stream when we were doing the draft cast. And then I watched more of his tape for the column that I was writing. It was a big film breakdown. And I'm like, look, this team's got Lavonte David playing Will. They've got Quan Alexander playing Mike. Kendall Beckwith has to play Sam. And Beckwith's just not good at contact. He's just not. He's not good getting off blocks. He's not good engaging. He's not good holding the point of attack. And that's what you got to do when you play Sam in a 4-3. You've got to be able to help. Right. Near the line of scrimmage. You've got to be that first guy in to kind of sift through the crap, maybe take up some blocks, let the other dudes come in and get the tackles. And Beckwith was terrible at that at LSU. And then all of a sudden, he kind of worked space a lot better, understood where he could shoot gaps and how he could use his hands and get off blocks. And he wasn't even the same guy for the Buccaneers. So, you know, good for them. Again,
he looked like he lost weight, too. I mean, I don't know.
He tore his ACL in November, right. And he was back for training camp. So, I mean, like, I had Duke Riley above Kendall Beckwith, and I thought that was pretty easy, but, you know, both of them
we'll see how it turns out. I mean, Riley struggled as a rookie for sure. Like, he missed tackles, and he was in the starting lineup to begin the season and then kind of got hurt and then got faded out of the starting lineup toward the end of the year. So, I think that it's a huge season for him. There's no doubt about it. It's a massive season for him because Devondre Campbell's come along nicely, and there's, you know, in these days, two linebackers are probably going to play, and Deion Jones is obviously going to be one. So I think that, you know, there's going to be that competition there. And Riley's a very good athlete, moves really well in space, made some nice plays in coverage at LSU, just has to improve his processing in the game. He's a one-year starter when he came out. So This, you know, it's no surprise that he struggled as a rookie. Yeah, it's totally fine. But this is a big year for him. There's no question. You know, we talked about with Jared Davis, linebacker's a mental position, man. If you can't translate what you see on the whiteboard to the field, you're just going to have a long career.
Unless you're like a 3-year starting senior, like a linebacker or something, especially when you're playing a centerpiece of a defense, you know, when you up the speed and you don't have that experience behind you, you've got to think that it's almost a 3-year plan for these guys. So I think that that's kind of what it is for Duke Riley. So, you know, hopefully you see a step up there. And in his third year, hopefully you're seeing him take a lot of command. So
LSU's a freaking linebacker factory, man.
Yeah, they really are.
Between the Bucks and the Falcons. I think we know what team's going to take Devin White next year. Either Tampa or Atlanta, the way things are going.
Quanti in the draft room with Jason Light, just holding up giant signs with LSU players.
The Saints had an unreal draft class. I mean, Marshawn Lattimore, best corner, I thought. And
how are you going to do this to the Panthers, man?
What, finish with them?
I thought that you were going to finish with the Saints, and now we're about to rave about the best draft class in the NFL, and then we're going to have to go, Carolina.
I just want to hammer a team to finish the pod today.
Yeah, New Orleans, nearly unprecedented, right?
I mean, it's probably one of the – now, we'll see. We have to see how it turns out. I mean
– yeah, but –
you know, but it has the look of one of those great draft classes with guys like Lattimore and Kamara and becoming instant stars, winning offensive and defensive rookie of the year. Ryan Ramczyk, a stud, a tackle.
If Anzalone would have been healthy, this team drafted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 starters.
Wait, are you counting Trey Hendrickson as a starter?
Oh, did he not play starter minutes?
No. Oh, okay. He's a rotational guy. He probably won't start this year either, but he'll be a good guy for a long time.
I guess the flashes I just watched, Trey Hendrickson was always on the field.
He played on a lot of passing downs. He had 2 sacks.
Yeah, okay, then there you are. Right. That's probably why I saw him on the field a lot.
They had 6 picks in the top 3 rounds, too. And so to hit on that many, you know, and we'll see. If Anzalone can stay on the field, it's going to be huge for this team because they really need that. But Kamara and Lattimore look like stars, and they really are. I mean, they won offensive and defensive rookie of the year. Ramczyk looked like the best of the tackle group as the season went on. Early in the season, I thought he looked a little bit rough, but as the season went on, he really settled in, got less help than Cam Robinson, and Garrett Bowles was kind of up and down. I mean, all three were solid, but I thought Ramczyk looked very good. Marcus Williams had a great season until the Stephon Diggs moment. You know, so it was just a complete stud class. So, I mean, in terms of year 2 projection, Lattimore, Ramczyk, Williams, Kamara, obvious starters, Ingram being suspended the first couple weeks of the season. Puts Kamara in there as the actual starter.
Is he out for 4 games or 2?
4, I believe, yeah.
Dang.
So, yeah. It's,
must be good to be an Alvin Kamara dynasty fantasy owner like myself.
Oh, wow. Way to believe when others doubted.
Dude.
Anzalone comes into this mix and he starts going to have 5 starters from this class.
It's a lot of athletes on defense if Anzalone can be in the center.
And they need Anzalone. You know, we talk about year 2 projection for these guys. I think it's obvious for those first 4 because they were so good and started as rookies. You know, we know they've got to continue that level of play, improve some things, obviously. But Anzalone's the guy. He's got to stay on the field.
He's just never healthy, man. He was never healthy at Florida.
Right, never.
When him and Gerard Davis were next to each other at Florida, that was – they had so much speed, they could go sideline to sideline with any rushing attack they played, any of them. And Anzalone just can't stay on the field. And you got, like, you feel for the guy because a lot of times injuries are bad luck. But if they keep happening, then.
I was surprised somebody took him in the 3rd round. Although he never had, like, a major injury, I don't think. He just had so many, like, nagging type of consistent injuries. It's weird. But he's the guy, really. He and Hendrickson, I mean, the more Hendrickson's role can evolve, obviously. He was the 103rd pick, so it's not like they thought he was going to be a lock starter going forward. And he doesn't really need to be. He can be that rotational rusher, and that's honestly the best role for him. He can get kick inside. He can play on the outside some. Keep it simple for him. Let him pin his ears back. That's the type of player that he is. So I think they're using him the right way. How about the Panthers? Looking at this 2017
Panthers
draft
had an extremely odd draft.
If by odd you mean oddful, and by oddful you mean awful.
I'm just going to say it was extremely odd.
We'll edit that out.
I don't – like Christian McCaffrey.
We've said this about McCaffrey before, right? A guy you want on your team, a guy that you're crazy for taking with the 8th pick in the draft. You want him on your team.
That's almost the O.J. Howard case. Almost.
Yeah, but he was the 19th pick.
Right. But, like, people would still say.
And I wouldn't disagree with people necessarily who say that, especially if you're the Bucs. But I think it's even more prevalent when you're a running back. Because, a great game for O.J. Howard, he could have 4 catches and still make it work. If you're taking a running back,
this
guy has to have, like,
Yeah, if you're taking a 20, running back 25 eight, touches a game. I don't know how it wasn't. Like, how was it not Dalvin Cook?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think the character concerns play a large part in it, but I'm not even sure if that was the reason. I think they honestly thought Christian McCaffrey's going to be that good, and then he went out and he averaged, like, 3 yards a carry as a rookie. And, you know, there are things that can improve, and I'm not saying Christian McCaffrey's a bust or anything McCaffrey's like that.
Yeah.
I think he's a talented player that helps your team. Sure. You just don't want him at number eight. You can find a guy. Right. Can, look, Alvin Kamara went in the third round, and he's better than McCaffrey at everything. You can find guys that can do that versatile, balanced type of stuff and be a pass catcher, play in the slot. And you know, but McCaffrey is never going to be a bell cow back.
But then they like doubled down on the skill set and took Curtis Samuel.
And I don't even know. I mean, I don't even know Curtis Samuel.
Like they were like, all right, if Christian McCaffrey didn't work out at number eight, let's take Curtis Samuel number 40.
And Curtis Samuel's biggest moment was dropping the game winning or a big touchdown pass against the Dolphins and then breaking his ankle on the same play. It was a brutal year for Curtis Samuel.
I just did not get this draft guy. I didn't get it at the time. I don't get it now. I don't get why he would double down on a replaceable position, almost like a gadget player.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Samuel is, essentially. He's a guy you take in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah.
And they took him in the second. They took him at 40 overall.
I like Curtis Samuel, but – and I even – You could even talk me into Curtis Samuel around where he got picked if you would have done something different at number eight. But, like, I just don't understand how you think that value is going to come out of that. Because when you draft Christian McCaffrey in the NFL, you're almost like telling your offense you got to create a new position anyways because you've got to be able to get the most out of him as a running back and a wide receiver and all this stuff. So almost like we heard Ron Rivera talk about last year, they almost have a separate playbook for Christian McCaffrey. Like, for Christian McCaffrey, emphasize things. It's almost like a separate playbook. So you're doing that for a rookie and then investing another high capital draft pick in that same thing for a less talented guy, and you don't even know if it's going to work.
Makes no sense.
That was really, really weird to me. And that's what I thought on draft night. It's kind of what I think now. Yeah, you can talk about the rest of the class now. So there you go.
It's I completely agree. It was ridiculous.
Don't hate on Corn Elder or I'll fight you.
I'm not hating on Corn Elder. Is he on this roster still? Yes, he's still on the roster. So don't worry. So I'm not hating on Corn Elder. I have no idea if he was good his rookie year. I don't think he played much. But before that, we already touched on McCaffrey, who's going to be an impact player for them. I mean, he got 80 catches for 651 yards, so he didn't do a lot with it. But he's going to move the chains and do some underneath stuff. And, do you take, running backs like Danny Woodhead and those type of guys high? McCaffrey will be a better version than them. But, he wasn't overly elusive as a rookie, and he isn't strong enough to be a good in-between-the-tackles runner. So,
again, I think it makes – If you have a plan in place and you build a championship team or even a team that competes for a championship, you live with it and it's okay. But if you don't, you just got to sit here and be like, man, what were you thinking? Picking a guy who a lot of I think we praise GMs and coaches sometimes for thinking outside the box a lot. And obviously you're never going to be on the forefront of the next great thing in the NFL or in any sport or in any job, really, unless you learn to think outside the box. But sometimes it turns into swing and misses. I'm not saying that McCaffrey's going to be like a total miss. I think he's a really good football player. But I just think that for what the Panthers did and this draft strategy that they built around him in 2017, I think was a little bit odd.
Yeah, you need an annual 1,200-yard rusher that gives you, the type of yardage he does on the through the air as well every season. So, yeah, whether McCaffrey will be that guy still remains to be seen. I have my doubts. Going into the draft, definitely have my doubts after watching him year one. Taylor Moton, though, this is the last pick in the second round. They have clear offensive line needs, and this guy can't crack the starting lineup. And, we have barely seen Moton, so I'm not going to say like he's played bad. I thought he was a third-round type of guy, and I thought he probably would have to move inside to guard unless you were willing to give him a lot of help in pass protection. And I don't know where you're playing him because Darrell Williams played okay, and, again, they give their tackles a lot of help in pass protection, and they have to. Matt Khalil's bad, and he can't win the left tackle spot over him. They let Andrew Norwell walk, which, again, why wasn't there a plan in place when your guards are as important as they are in the Panthers' offense? Why isn't there a plan in place to replace him? Now Jeremiah Searles, who was a tackle/guard over in Minnesota, backup guy, is in line to start. I mean, unless Moten can beat him out, and Moten I know is getting a crack at some guard reps, so the whole thing just makes no sense to me.
You Khalil Mack was the guy that they signed in free agency, right?
Matt Khalil, yeah.
Or Matt Khalil, yeah. Because when that happened, because he had a massive contract, right? If I remember, they paid him a crazy amount of money.
I actually don't know what they paid him. Let me look.
I think. Look it up really quick.
But anyway, either way, I mean, you paid a tackle who was terrible throughout his career to protect your franchise quarterback. He got killed a couple times last season. Yeah, he did get a big contract.
So, Katie Nolan, the day that he signed...
It's pretty backloaded. They can get out of it. Sorry.
Okay. Katie Nolan, she works for ESPN now, I think. She does the No Filter show. She tweeted, she's like, Carolina Panthers saying this, like, we'll sign you for this much money. And they're like, you realize it was like, who do you think you're getting? And the Panthers are like, Khalil Mack. And they're like, no, Matt Khalil. And they're like, no, it's Khalil Mack. Like, for the money that they were signing him for.
That's awesome. I lied again, actually. It's going to be a $9.8 million hit for them to get out of his contract. That's it, not until 2020.
Oh, rip.
Gosh. They can't get out of his contract next year. I was looking at the dates wrong.
I think they still think they got Khalil Mack.
You're not kidding, though. Side note.
Side note. Super side note. Yes. Did you see the picture of Amari Cooper from yesterday?
Yes, I did.
Dude, the tank.
Yeah. Listen, you got to squeeze that ball.
At the end, if he drops one more pass.
If you can't catch, man, you got to get those muscles built up so you can squeeze that sucker. That's the only way. Everybody knows from the tales of David Boston that the only way to be a good receiver is to just get jacked.
Somebody showed me a picture of David Boston when he showed up 257 at camp, and it's just the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
His arms are insane. That dude was yoked. But basically, the Panthers have gotten nothing from their draft class whatsoever. I mean, Deshaun Hall in the third round had a redshirt year, basically. I know he got hurt early on, but you know, super raw guy who missed basically that entire season. So.
Deshaun Hall claimed as some to be just as good as Myles Garrett.
Who said that?
Dude, there was a Deshaun Hall hive.
There definitely was, but that's crazy.
Because it was the last year of Myles Garrett where people were like, oh, he's taking plays off. He doesn't care.
I will say, yeah, and Deshaun Hall was taking every play extremely seriously and still not good. So I don't know what people were talking about.
Effort.
I do say there is a... It's effort, One of the most unbelievable trends of any draft season is watching teammate hives, you know, kind of well up. I mean, we saw Marcel Aidman this past year with James Washington. Remember that?
Yeah.
People were literally in full force. Aidman is better in like November and December. And then these people just silenced as the year went on. I mean, it was unbelievable to watch. And it happens every single year. People just want to, he got drafted in the seventh, I think.
Okay.
People just want to make a splash statement. So they say, so-and-so might not even be the best wide receiver on their team. It's like, what?
Not even the best wide receiver on his own team.
And they love saying that crap, dude. I think they heard Mel Kiper say it one time about some dude, and maybe he was right. So now everybody tries to
I have uttered that phrase once. You know what it was?
It could be true at times, but who was it?
Leonard Fournette at LSU ain't even the best running back on his own team.
A freaking men, my man. Amen.
Got his hive.
Amen. People, Fournette's one of those guys that's going to live on his college resume for forever. He's going to be fine in the NFL.
I thought he was fine in the NFL. Yeah.
He's going to be fine. He's just not better than Kareem Hunt or Alvin Kamara.
I think Fournette went to the perfect team, though.
He did. That's a great fit for him.
Just attitude, scheme, how they're going to build it around him, how they have the freedom to build it around him because they don't have anything else going on offense. I think he went to the perfect team.
Yeah, it's a great fit for him. There's no doubt about it. Right up his alley. But, you know,
Anyways, that has nothing to do with the NFC South draft class.
Very true. We'll get to the AFC South, and we will talk about, AFC South, and we will talk about Leonard Fournette, but on another time. We finish out the NFC this week, then we start on the AFC next week. Until then, keep it locked right here. Locked On NFL Draft.